So let's dive straight in. We heard that Latin America has one of the highest market shares for low-cost carriers around the world, but at the same time, it's growing very, very fast. So what are the dynamics that are driving the growth of LCCs in this region? Who would like to kick off? You're all very polite. Go on, somebody, please.
Well, I can start. Basically, I think that if you look back the last 15 years, we didn't have LCCs in Latin America, and obviously the starting point is much lower, and the opportunity was laying there. Then there are difficulties in this region that it's different from Europe in several aspects. Like, we don't have open skies. We have taxation from the government. The economy relies, it's growing. It has been growing in most of the countries, but we have the exchange rate that doesn't help the airlines neither. The airport operators, most of them, they were public entities, so they were not very business-oriented. And I think we have been doing that here and developing in Latin America as Vinci Airports. Our footprint here has been growing, and I think we have been helping the development of low-cost airlines a little bit everywhere. In Chile with JetSMART, in the Dominican Republic with Aerojet and with Spirit. I'm looking at Camilo, and now we are just arriving to OMA, and we have Viva that is there, and Volaris.
That's great. And if you sorry, please.
And if I just may add, your question was around what is driving the growth.
Yes, yeah.
I think for me, fundamentally, it's really about population. Latin America has a younger population than, Europe or even the U.S. Birth rates are still, healthy. And then, on top of that, you have good economic growth as well powering it. And so you see the propensity to travel going up, employment, even though it's not where it's supposed to be, still decently healthy. And then, newer generations just all grow up, looking at, Instagram travel reels and all this stuff. And so I think demand has been healthy, will continue to be so.
Yeah.
Coupled also with sort of all the pent-up demand from COVID, I think we just have the perfect storm in terms of where we are today in terms of demand, and I think those trends are going to continue.
Okay, that makes sense. Javier, if I can ask you, because you've had experience both here in Latin America and in other geographies as well, how do you see the difference in terms of propensity or, welcoming for LCCs?
Sure. So yes, as just mentioned, as you mentioned, I joined an airline in Canada a few years ago. Back then, and that's not too long ago, I think it's like 3, 4 years ago, there was no LCC penetration in Canada. And we're not talking about, like, we're talking about North America.
Yeah.
And it's not the country or location, continent. It has to do with having the right LCC with a proper management team, deploying the right network, what drives people to jump on LCCs. So if you look at Canada now, the LCC penetration is a lot larger. And the same thing happens in Latin America, Europe, Asia, et cetera. So it's all about having the right network, and we're all human beings. And we all like paying less to get from A to B, and Latin America is definitely not different.
Yeah, makes sense. Camilo, I was going to ask you.
Yeah, I think it has been a perfect match between what the market was looking for and what we can offer. Of course, the Latin America and the Caribbean region is very close to North America, U.S., and Canada, which produces a great amount or a great number of travelers into the region. And North America has a very strong middle class. In addition, the Latin America and the Caribbean region's middle class is also growing. And the middle class is looking for affordable travel options. And that's what we do best. And I think that's why I believe it has been the perfect match. In addition, the region offers tremendous destinations, rich in cultural heritage, in addition, unique experiences. I was looking at some numbers before I came to illustrate some of the answers. And when we first launched the model in 2007, we only had a 3% capacity deployed into the Caribbean and Latin America. 16 years later, from a network construction perspective, we deployed about 20% of our capacity in Latin America and the Caribbean. Now let's bring it home. In the Dominican Republic, when we first landed, we only served Fort Lauderdale, Santo Domingo, or Santo Domingo, Fort Lauderdale. Years later, not only we continue serving Santo Domingo, Fort Lauderdale, but we have also added 5 additional markets. 17 years ago, it was only 3 times per week service. Today, twice a week to Fort Lauderdale, twice a week to Orlando. We have also added 2 new airports, Punta Cana, Santiago. I was doing some comparison, comparing May 22 to May 22, 2023, we have grown our departing flights, seats, and ASMs by 41, 31, and 36% respectively. So that is a testament of the success we have had in the region and how much the traveling public value our product in the region.
Those are very impressive statistics, and that really illustrates the fit, as you said, between the LCC product and what the region is looking for. One of the big contradictions, though, I would see is we know that the LCC model is one about low costs and efficiency and so on, but we've also been hearing, whether from Peter or from the speakers this morning, about how this region has infrastructure challenges, has regulatory challenges. So it sounds, on the one hand, as though the market is really right for low-cost carriers, but the regulatory and infrastructure side is really wrong for low-cost carriers. So how do we reconcile that?
Okay, there are things that unfortunately we're unable to control, and it's important to acknowledge that there are challenges and opportunities as well. Things we don't control are the microeconomics, the civil unrest, the geopolitical, the COVID. We don't control the fact that sometimes fares tend to airfares, they add taxes and fees to airfares. So we didn't control that, and we allow Peters and the Altas and the Yadas to actually address that. But what we can control is how much value we add to our travel options. And it's important to highlight that that's what will make a difference. We, as an industry, we are competing against other industries for that discretionary consumer spending. And we need to create value in our travel options. So for instance, what we have done in our company is that a few years back, we launched some strategic initiative in order to improve the guest experience. We reconfigure, for instance, our main cabin. Now our seats are way more comfortable. In fact, the middle seat has about an inch wider than the window seat and at the aisle seat. We have launched Wi-Fi with the launch of the SEC satellite by Thales. We have high-speed connectivity internet that feels like home, about 400 megabits per second. It feels like you're working or streaming from home or from your office. We have also, in order to improve the guest experience at the airport, we have also introduced some self-service equipment, we call them SBDs, with biometric technology that transfers the power to consumers to take control of their travel journey and the check-in process. What that does is that reduces the lobby congestion, reduces lines, and then improve the guest experience. We have also launched a WhatsApp line where consumers can not only make changes to the travel itineraries, they can also do customer service and even buy tickets. The end result is that just a few months back, we took home the prestigious ATW Value Airline of the Year Award, and we're very proud of that.
That's really good. So there's a lot of innovation going on there. And I take the point about having to work around the regulatory environment. If I look at other regions in the world where LCCs have done very, very well, I take Europe as an example, there are a lot of airports competing. So there are a lot of secondary airports, and they compete for traffic, and that helps to get airport costs down. So in this region, is there the same dynamic, or is it a challenge for LCCs to get those airport deals? And I know you're all you're all very polite, so I'll just start pointing to people specifically. So Alvaro, let's start with the airport point of view. How do you see the LCC market?
Well, I see that there is a lot of opportunities in the LCC market in Latin America. Basically, we can discuss in that we were having that conversation, Javier and I, just before the panel, and Mexico City, it's a good example. It can have a secondary airport. But in general, what I believe is that more and more there are alternatives to connect second-tier cities in Latin America that they are not connect, even secondary and third-tier cities in Latin America that they are not connected. Mexico is a good example. If we look at the development in Santo Domingo, we are now having Tampa that is connected to Santo Domingo. We are having San Jose with Arajet. There are plenty of routes that they can still open. We need to think that we Latin America has lived for many years in a hub-and-spoke environment, and what is important is to develop the point-to-point. Point-to-point is where we want to be as an airport. And going back to your question about the infrastructure, we need as well to have the right infrastructure. And having the right infrastructure is having the right capex, developing only what is necessary for the airlines to be able to operate, to be efficient, to have biometry, to have the right number of gates. You don't need a huge airport. We as a company, Vinci Airports, we are not in the mood of building terminals for airlines. We build terminals for all the airlines, and we optimize what we have. And that's the way to go. That's the way to keep costs low and to continue to develop the market.
That makes sense. Javier, I don't want to start an argument between you and Alvaro, but from your point of view... Well, feel free. It would be good theater. From the point of view of Viva Aerobus, I mean, when you go and talk to new airports, do they understand your model? Do they get it, or are they still trying to charge too much?
They do. I mean, in Mexico, I mean, airports are unfortunately not cheap. There is definitely a need for LCC airports terminals for short. You know, I agree with Alvaro as well that there's a lot of point-to-point that that needs to be developed, and you know, we're tapping into these kind of opportunities. There's alternative airports in Mexico City, for example, and you just mentioned Toluca, Santa Lucia Airport. I think as long as they're cheaper to operate, you know, it'll take a little bit of time, but sure. As long as the infrastructure, connectivity, there's we need buses, train, Uber, taxis, whatever, and then, you know, back to the same concept, you know, we're all human beings and people will start using them. They're using them in Mexico City, and that will happen. But you know, our model is understood. However, sometimes our model goes a little bit against the economic interest of the airport.
Sure.
There's a difficult.
It makes sense. How have you found it?
I think our friend Alberto understands it. You know, I have worked with Alberto for a very long time, and he gets it. Now,
is he paying you to say those nice things?
No. What I think is important is Alberto is only one stakeholder in this entire ecosystem. Only one. So the question is that does the entire ecosystem understands that experience and price creates value? As I mentioned before, we're competing against other industries. And with value, the value perception is not only influenced by the traveler's perception when they travel through the airports or my airline or another airline. It's also influenced by their interaction, their engagement across industries. So we need to be competitive by creating an environment that is conducive to growth, by creating more value on our travel options.
That makes sense. Nassim, let me ask you from the Aerojet point of view, because it's something that Alvaro mentioned a moment ago about kind of optimizing airports for point-to-point, and point-to-point tends to be the dominant model for low-cost carriers. But I know that Aerojet is looking at this differently and is looking at providing a connecting hub. What are the particular challenges that come with being a low-cost carrier that's doing connecting flights?
Well, I think the challenges are clear. The demands on infrastructure are greater because we will have, as a connecting carrier, much more peaky types of operations. And our partners from Aerodome are here. And also there's risk in terms of disruptions and so on and so forth. But we believe in our model because when looking at secondary airports in a city like Mexico City, that can make a lot of sense. It's not 100% there yet. I think we're like an early entrant. For example, if you look for Mexico City on certain OTAs, NLU does not show up yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that will come, and we believe it's going to come. But if you start talking about secondary cities in Mexico and in Latin America, that will take much longer to develop. And so I think the longevity of our thesis as a connecting carrier is way long enough to be able to build a business around. And when direct point-to-point services will make sense between secondary cities, you know, then I guess we'll have to shift away from those. But for now, I think, you know, for the foreseeable future, 10, 15 years at minimum, we don't see the traffic and the demand between secondary cities, especially in the international market.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, and I'm not asking for any commercial secrets, but what do you anticipate being the split between point-to-point passengers and connecting passengers?
Depends on the year. So today we're predominantly point-to-point.
Yeah, sure.
We're in the single digits in terms of connecting passengers, which we just started doing.
Yeah, sure.
But down the line, it'll be north of 50%.
Okay. So you're gonna be Pedro's number one competitor in Copa in a few years' time.
We'll see.
Okay. That's modest. Very good. I mean, one of the questions I suppose I have about LCCs in the region is obviously in the last few months we've seen some fairly high profile casualties amongst LCCs in this region as well. And I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on what the specific challenges are around making an LCC successful. I mean, I think obviously about what's been happening in Colombia in the last few months. And I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but this has been a situation where there seems to have been demand, but the airlines have not been able to, or the regulators have not been able to allow that to go forward. Are there specific regulatory challenges that the regulators don't understand at the moment, or what needs to happen to make this work better in future?
I'll say that to start with, COVID had a huge impact in the region. We must admit that this was the only region where there was no public aid. There was public aid in the United States, in Europe, and that allowed airlines to be in better shape after COVID. It was not the case here, so these guys have done an excellent job surviving COVID. The second part of it is regulation. Regulation is fundamental. And if we look at Brazil, that it's probably the most untapped market in South America or in Latin America, there is regulation that doesn't allow airlines to sell ancillaries. And they are kind of mandatory when you buy your ticket. So if these kind of regulations don't induct airlines to put capacity, because at the end of the day they will have the same exactly same price structure as a legacy carrier. So these kind of things are important. Then I mentioned it in the beginning. Today in Mexico or in the Dominican Republic, the currency is strong, is stronger facing the dollar. But normally it's not like that. Normally the currencies are going down, and that is a huge problem for airlines to have a stable cost. And it's where we try to help airlines as well with the incentives that we provide, long-term incentives. We think as an airport operator that is there to stay. So we are not going, if we can stay 30 years longer in a country, we will. So in that sense, we try to help as well the carriers to develop. Mm-hmm. But essentially, regulation is important, and airlines and airports, they must be aligned in that aspect. They need to go together to the governments and to push for regulation to change. Peter, just before, he mentioned that, and that is crucial for the development of the region. Open skies. Yeah. Open skies is another thing. It's Europe has a huge advantage because Ryanair or EasyJet or Wizz Air, they can base their planes wherever they want. It's the regulation, it's the same. Here it's not the case. You need a new AOC, then you need the traffic rights, then you need something else, and that doesn't push for the induction of the market.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say currency devaluation is a risk, and that applies to Colombia. You know, being not having the freedom airlines have in Europe is also preventing many airlines to reduce their size in Latin America.
Yeah,
you know, it's not the case of Brazil or even Mexico, but like there's other smaller countries in Latin America where, like, you know, unless they can tap into other countries, then, you know, they're not going to have the scale that is pretty much required to go through turbulences. And and then I guess the rest applies to airlines in Latin America, but also in the US and Europe. And it is having a proper business model and the right management team. That's it.
Sure.
If you don't have it, you're not gonna make it whenever there's definitely things such as COVID, right? Yeah.
No, that makes sense. You'd mentioned open skies, and do you see any hope on the horizon of any kind of regulatory liberalization like that?
As an airport group, we are supportive on open skies. Every time there is an occasion to be supportive on open skies, we will be, because we know that the development is coming from there.
In my case, as long as it is bilateral, if you know what I mean, then you know we're yes. We're good for that.
I think we know what you're hinting at there. Yes, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah. By the way, just a word for the audience. I have another couple of questions, and then I'll be very happy to see if there are any questions from the audience. So please have a think about if there's anything you'd like to ask our panel today. It's a good opportunity. We're talking about liberalization, but we're talking about how airlines have difficulty serving other markets. Do you see any scope for consolidation, mergers amongst LCCs in the region? We've seen some activity amongst the network carriers here, but is there anything likely to happen amongst the LCCs?
Camilo, you have a lot to say there, no?
No, Camilo gets a free pass on this one, I have to say, because there's stuff going on, so I'm not going to put him on the spot, because otherwise some U.S. Marshals will come and take him away, I think.
I'll take this one. So clearly, sure. we've seen consolidation in the industry. There's many tie-ups. There's the ABRA group, of that. I don't think that the LCC landscape particularly is ready for that, because there are still a lot of new projects with a lot of growth potential, including Aerojet and including other ones in the region.
Sure.
JetSmart is still growing. You know, there's a lot of that. I think overall consolidation tends to happen when growth slows and it starts to make sense to kind of consolidate cost bases and build a larger group. At this point, I think we're in the phase in the cycle where I don't see it happening in the next 7 years, let's say. But as COVID has shown, things can change very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So you never know. Never say never.
Okay. So do we have any questions from the audience out there? Please, Jaime, you have a microphone?
Thank you. Jaime Escobar from ALTA, the Latin American Airline Association. And the question is for Aerojet. When you decided to fly to Mexico City and you chose AIFA as opposed to the main airport, was it because the government asked you to do that, or was it because a real economic decision?
It was an economic and strategic decision based on mainly two things. The first one being cost and the second one being upside, because we knew that we weren't going to start with three frequencies and stay there. That the ability to have the slots that we need or the timings that we need was going to be very important for us, and that we were going to make a lot of changes going forward after we started the route. And so it made sense for us, and with our ULCC mindset and DNA, we also wanted to give a chance to a secondary airport, even though from a traffic perspective it did come with risks. But it has worked out pretty well, and we're very happy with the decision.
And the second question would be very similar. Next year, we're going to have a second airport near Cancun. The Tulum airport will be operational in February or March. Will you be operating to the new airport or the old airport near Cancun?
Something we can consider, but not in the plans as yet. Can they divulge anything which is not public?
Thank you.
I can answer that question if you like. I think Cancun and Tulum are like somehow two different airports. I mean, they're covering two different regions, if you will. I mean, they can be looked at as alternative airport, And, you know, that would be probably right. You know, some people go to Tulum to go to Cancun and the way around. But I think they're two different markets. And I think, you know, many airlines will start operating to Tulum, and we're one of them. Even without considering the cost, both airports are feasible for our business model, at least.
Any other questions? Sorry, the light is in my eyes, so I have to look as though I'm looking in the distance. Anyone else? No, good. You're all enjoying yourselves enough. This is a super discussion. I'm really enjoying it. One of the other dynamics that we see in the low-cost market in other parts of the world, for example, in Europe, is the beginnings of cooperation between some low-cost carriers and some network carriers. So, for example, a network carrier flies to a region, they want to have some local feed, so they end up doing some sort of a deal with a low-cost carrier. Do you see that happening in this region, or are the existing players just not interested in that?
For sure. I mean, in our case, like we have a co-chair with Iberia Airlines. Mm-hmm. Basically, you know, Iberia has like 3 daily flights to Mexico City. Once passengers get to Mexico City, they use our network to get their passengers distributed. So that's at least happening in Mexico. I'm mm-hmm. not sure about mm-hmm. other countries. And then in addition to partnerships between legacy and LCCs, we can also see, and this is something that we're currently working on, all the kind of alliances. In our case, we're doing a joint venture with an LCC in the US. So that's happening as well.
Okay, because one of the, and I guess the LCC model is blurring a little bit, because once upon a time, the LCC model was, let's keep it very simple. We have no connecting flights, no connecting bags, no disrupted passengers. So
I think one of the beauties is that technology is facilitating all that. You know, you can use technology to get rid of some complexity. Absolutely. Now, given my experience, like code sharing or having an alliance with an LCC, like very similar to yours, is way easier than code sharing or having a partnership with an airline, and legacy airline, which is totally different, and you have like different like bundles, fare families, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, okay. And I guess, Nassim, from your point of view, maybe it's too early for Aerojet to think about possible cooperation. You're still quite standalone?
No, we are thinking about it, and okay. We are having active conversations. I think we're pretty lucky geographically to be where we are, because if you consider a long-haul carrier coming to the Dominican Republic, we can do the same thing and distribute passengers to sure. Central America, South America, and the Caribbean. And that is something that we're exploring. Today, you know, we started flying 9-10 months ago, and so we're still developing those ideas. But definitely something that we see potential in, and I think the comment is right. Technology is making a lot of it easier. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of things you can do to mitigate risks from a scheduling perspective, disruption perspective. Sure. And so as long as we can feel confident that we can mitigate all of those, it's something that we'll pursue.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, I take your point about the technology, and I know there's various virtual interline products and distribution products to make it easier to stick these together. Camilo, from your point of view, I mean, Spirit is a self-declared ultra-low-cost carrier, so you are keeping things as simple and as low-cost as possible. Would you look at this kind of collaboration with other carriers, or is that just a bridge too far?
I mean, right now we're focused on, you know, on our business model, continuing what we do best is, you know, offering affordable travel options, high value, and I think that's what we will continue doing.
Okay, no, that's got the virtues of simplicity. We're kind of coming towards the end of our discussion, and again, if there's any other questions out there, you're very welcome. Sorry, I look as though I'm peering into the distance. Otherwise, you'd be, I'm sure, able to catch our speakers during the coffee break. But I wanted, just as we wrap up, to ask each of you, you're running very different businesses, but how do you see your business ideally, let's say in 5 years' time, how do you think it is likely to have developed? And indeed, how do you think the environment is likely to have developed? And, you know, maybe Javier, I'll kick off with you.
All right. I was here in the previous panel, and I heard Copa saying that they want to be a little bigger and a little better.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what we're looking forward to doing. And in addition to that, we're looking forward to becoming a less seasonal airline, and that we're hoping to achieve it through our joint venture with Allegiant. So with this partnership, we're hoping to fly a lot more in the first quarter of the year, which is a pretty bad quarter in Mexico. So a little bigger, a little better, and a less seasonal airline.
That's, okay, that's okay. Good. So that's a modest set of goals, but that's fair enough. Camilo, for Spirit, how do you see that going?
Yeah, well, what we really want is we want to focus on the developing markets that are conducive to growth. For us, it's important to have the correct infrastructure. The correct infrastructure will allow us to have an efficient use of our staff and resources. That will allow us to increase our aircraft utilization. That will allow us to reduce our unit cost. Then we will be able to offer affordable travel options. Then we will stimulate demand. People will fly. We will deploy more capacity. Everybody wins.
Right. So it's a virtuous, kind of virtuous circle. Makes sense. And Alvaro, from your point of view?
I'll say that we just arrived to Mexico, a very well-managed company. There's potential to grow, so we see ourselves growing. We have 13 airports in the country. It's easier to look at Monterrey and to work with Viva, that it's our home-based carrier together with Aeromexico. But Viva is doing a great job there. We want to help them to build their hub in Monterrey. But at the same time, we want to develop the other airports that we have in the network then. From a sustainability point of view, we want to continue our path on carbon neutrality, and we want to be more efficient, to have more technology, to allow passengers to connect better in our airports. That's where what we want to do.
Okay, that makes sense. And Nassim, I come to you, but I recognize that Victor was here this morning, and I asked him the same question, and he gave some very, very precise answers. So we can test to see whether you have the same answers.
The 57 destinations?
Yeah, the 57 destinations, yeah. Like Heinz has 57 varieties, and you have 57 destinations. So I guess my question then is, somewhere in your office, is there a map on a wall with 57 pins in it?
Not in the office, but it's on our computers, yes.
Okay, so that's a challenge to any hackers. But the goal then is you have a clearly defined plan of rolling out the destinations, growing the connecting traffic, and bringing in more aircraft and so on.
Yeah, for us, we aspire to be a well-recognized brand in the Americas region, the whole region, to be a dominant player in the Dominican Republic. So we want to be able to offer Dominicans the opportunity to travel almost anywhere in the region at an affordable price. And this is something that we take a lot of pride in, because we monitor how much we are able to stimulate in terms of new demand. And the numbers we're able to achieve are very, very strong and encouraging. We continue and we'll continue doing that. And so to get back to Pedro's comment and what you picked up on, of this thing of a little bigger, a little better, I think we hope to be a lot bigger and continue to get better. So,
okay, that sounds very good. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end, essentially, of our panel for now. And just before I thank the guests, I should point out that this morning we had a wonderful leaders panel, and Nassim, your boss Victor was here, and he had wonderful Aerojet-themed footwear. I noticed that Camilo has very stylish aircraft-themed socks. Yeah. So we're moving upwards gradually. Tomorrow, I think somebody will be wearing some sort of aviation-themed trousers. And after that, I'm a bit scared. I don't know what will happen. But in all seriousness, I hope you'll join me in thanking our panel, who are fantastic, and I learned an awful lot. So thank you very much, gentlemen.